सर्वेषां सुप्रभातम्। योगसूत्र परिचय वर्गः तस्य अष्टादशः वर्गः। प्रार्थना श्लोकेन आरम्भं कुर्मः। योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तम प्रवरम मुनीनाम पतंजलिम प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि। So at the outset, I'm just reminding about the change of schedule. Henceforth, the classes will be on Friday because I am getting frequent invites during the weekends to travel, so for various programs. So I'm shifting it to Friday. And again, I thank all of you for coming to the class, to adjusting to the schedule, change the schedule. Thank you. So now we will go into the revision of the previous class. Just a reminder, after discussing the fundamental principles of yoga like drashta, the seer, drishyam, the world outside and all its components, and understanding that the final goal of yoga is attainment of kaivalyam, that is the separation or isolation of the prakriti and the purusha from each other. So then how it is achieved? It is achieved through viveka khyati, a clear discrimination or distinction between the differences between the prakriti and the purusha. And then that should be very firm. That viveka khyati should be very steady and firm. And for the attainment of viveka khyati, there are various methods, and Ashtanga Yoga is one such method to attain Viveka Khyati. So we saw that by Ashtanga Yoga, Ashuddhi Kshaya and Jnana Deepti both happen. Ashuddhi Kshaya, weakening or destruction of Ashuddhi or impurities from the mind, body. And Jnana Deepti, the glow of knowledge, both of them happen. So the reduction of impurities and increase in knowledge. So that happens, increase in clarity, that happens by the practice of Ashtanga Yoga. And we saw that Ashtanga Yoga includes Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Jnana and Samadhi. And we also saw that in the second pada which we are discussing, discussion is limited to the bahirangas or the indirect means to attain the goal of yoga. That is still Pratyahara. So from Yama to Pratyahara, these five are considered as bahirangas, the external or indirect tools, methods to reach the goal of yoga. And so there ends the second pada, whereas the entire tritiya pada or the third pada is focused on the antaranga sadhanas, the intrinsic tools, the direct tools of the practice of yoga, or direct tools to reach the goal of yoga, dharana, jnana and samadhi. They are discussed in the third pada. So now then we started out with discussing what is yama and niyama. A major chunk of the sutras, 30 to 45 of the second pada, is devoted to the discussion of yama and niyama. And I just highlighted that this shows the importance given by Patanjali to these two limbs. Whereas for other limbs of the Ashtanga, only at the most 4 or 5 sutras are dedicated or devoted. So, we started discussing the definition of each as per Vyasa's commentary. So, Ahimsa, we saw I think 2 of them, Ahimsa and Satya, according to Vyasa's commentary. Ahimsa is stated by Vyasa as Sarvatha, Sarvada, Sarvabhutanam, Anabhidrohaha. Anabhidrohaha, harm. Drohaha is harm. Anabhidrohaha, not harming or not hurting. Not hurting Sarvabhutanam. So, not hurting any being, any living being. Not only human beings, any living being, not harming them. Sarvada, at all times, and Sarvatha, under all circumstances. Even when one's life is under threat, this has to be practiced. So, the word Sarvatha and Sarvada are to be noted. So, this becomes real Ahimsa. And then, Satyam. Satyam is Yatharthe Vang Manase. Both the mind and Manasam, the speech, Vak, are Yatharta. As it is. So, they factual. So, the ability of expressing or the attribute of expressing factually that is possessed by the speech and the mind is called as Satyam. And this being factual in speaking and factual in thinking at the state of the mind should be Sarvabhuta Upakarartham, should be for the welfare of all beings. Na bhutopaghataya. So, being factual should not lead to the harm of others. So, that was Satyam. We discussed in detail in the previous class. Now, we move forward to the other limbs or other constituents of Yama. Asteyam. Asteyam simply means non-stealing. Steyam is stealing. Asteyam, non-stealing. Vyasa says, Ashastra Purvakam Dravyanam Parataha Asvikaranam. So, Parataha Asvikaranam, from others, not taking, not stealing. So, that essentially is Asteya. So, not stealing things from others. That is, things Dravyanam. Dravyanam Parataha Asvikaranam. Not stealing things or not taking things from others. Not snatching things from others. Ashastra Purvakam, which goes against the scriptures. So, being well aware of the scriptures, not snatching or stealing things from others is called as Asteyam. Actually, this is one aspect of Asteyam. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita presents the other facet of Asteyam when he says, Yo bhungte stena eva saha, which means that apradaya yo bhungte stena eva saha. I think it is in the 4th chapter. He says, Asteyam, or a person is called as Astena, a thief, if he does not share his resources with others. So, resources are common to everyone. When one gets that, he should also share it with others and not selfishly consume it all alone. So, consuming or utilizing resources all alone for only oneself and not sharing them also amounts to steya or theft. That is another aspect of asteya that we find in Bhagavad Gita. This is another aspect where non-stealing, not snatching others' wealth, that is also asteyam. So, two facets of asteyam we could see here. Next one is Brahmacharyam. Brahmacharyam is stated by Vyasa as upastha, upasthasya sanyamaha. Upasthasya, upastha refers to the genitals or the sexual organs. Sanyamaha, control. So the control of sexual organs is called as abstinence from or control from sex or such activities is brahmacharya. And then finally brahmacharya aparigraha. Aparigraha. Aparigraha, non-acceptance. Non-acceptance of things from others. So this is defined by Vyasa in the following way. Vishayanam, Arjana, Rakshana, Kshaya, Sangha, Dosha, Darshanat, Asvikaranam. So, Aparigraha essentially means Asvikaranam, non-acceptance. Non-acceptance of gifts, materials and things. So, non-acceptance is essentially Aparigraha. And why this non-acceptance? That is also explained here. Vishayanam. So, of the things, so what is the nature? What happens when we start accumulating things or accepting things? So what happens is arjanam. So when we earn, arjanam refers to earning. So we have to earn. When one person starts earning or accepting things, so the desire to earn more and more, that comes. So arjanam. And then rakshanam. Rakshanam refers to the protection. So what has been earned, again it has to be protected. So that is there. And then kshaya. And the things which we have accepted, they are bound to decay or get destroyed or spoiled. So that is also possibility. And then sangha. And then we, whatever things we accept from others, there is a possibility that we start developing attachment towards it, which will distract or deflect us from the path of yoga. So these are the doshas, mistakes, or the probable difficulties in accepting things. So when one starts accepting, then more accepting, arjanam. So more and more such activity comes. And then rakshanam, protection of it, kshaya, decay of the thing. And then sangha and attachment towards the thing that is accumulated thus. So all these come along with the objects that we accept from others. So which are all these are distractions for a person who desires to progress in the path of yoga. So he should abstain from accepting things from others, looking at these possible distractions created which might be created by accepting things from others. So these five, ahimsa, satyam, asteyam, brahmacharyam and aparigraha, are the yamas, the very first constituents of the ashtanga yoga. Now we move to the guidelines. The next sutra brings out the guidelines in practicing this yama. So, as part of yoga, ashtanga yoga, when we practice ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya and aparigraha, how should it be? How should the practice be? So, that is presented. How intense should it be? Should we take it casually? Or how intense should the adherence to these principles, these yamas, should be? That is brought out in the next sutra, which says, Yete jati desha kala samaya anavachinnaha sarvabhomaha mahavratam. These five, ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya and aparigraha, should be considered or by a follower of yoga, by an initiated practitioner of yoga, he should practice it as Mahavratam. Vratam, we know above a religious practice. Religious practice always brings with it all the sincerity and seriousness. So the word vratam is used here. So all these five has to be taken seriously. And how seriously? Mahavratam, very seriously. So these have to be followed in a very sincere and serious way, and should not be, this is not a part-time work. This is a total devotion is needed in following, in practicing these five. So, what are the, how do we understand seriousness in practicing this? So, Vyasa or Patanjali explains this in the sutra that anavachinnaha, there shall not be any exceptions. For self-regulations or for others, when we frame some rules are always followed by exceptions. And but in this case, ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya and aparigraha, these are to be followed without any exceptions under any condition. So what are all the possible exceptions? So that is also listed out and excluded. So jati may bring out some exception. Desha, kala and samaya, they may bring about or present some exceptions, but even those exceptions should not be considered, and at all circumstances, at all times, these five have to be practiced. Now let us just go into the sutra and try to understand this. So jatyavachinna. A person belongs to a specific community. So he says that as part of my profession, I can do himsa. But otherwise, I will practice ahimsa. So initially, community and profession was associated in those olden times. So the word jati is given here. Vyasa gives the example of matsyavadhaka. For a person who is living by catching fish and selling them, if he claims that let there be exception only in my profession. See, excepting the fish, I will not harm any other being. This is again unacceptable. And for another example is a warrior. He says that, yeah, my duty is war, fighting to protect the country. Let me fight himsa as part of my duty. That is acceptable. And otherwise, I will not harm people. So, this is okay. This is ahimsa partly. But for those serious practitioners of ahimsa, this kind of practice is not prescribed. Of course, one has to exercise one's discrimination when in normal worldly activities, where to practice ahimsa and where to practice himsa, one should think all those things. But whereas, when a person has entered, when one becomes a sadhaka in the path of yoga, no consideration, no relaxation is possible. So that is the idea which is being conveyed here. So, there is an example, there is a small story. We see that in the life of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, there is a devotee of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa called Durga Charana Naga. He is called as Naga Mahashay. He was a practitioner. He was a medical practitioner. Once he just visited Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, he was not directly sitting in the audience. He was just standing outside, was just coming into the hall. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa was saying that medical profession is not very helpful towards spiritual progress. He was speaking that way because one has to utter a lot of lies and other things to convince or console, to console the patients and other things, and hence sadhaka should never continue with medical profession. So in this way he was speaking to others. So when this Durgacharana Naga was still not there in the audience, so on listening to this, he simply went back home and then threw his medical kit into Ganga, river Ganga. So he shed it, shed his profession even. So this shows that a sincere sadhaka will consider renouncing everything for the progress in his spiritual practice. So from the point of view of jati or one's profession, exception is not allowed for a practitioner. So one has to have a very clear distinction between a practitioner and a general person. So for a general normal human being who is not in the path of yoga, for him he has to, of course, sometimes he has to do himsa as part of profession. A doctor has to cut open the patient to operate upon him. All that is part of normal activity. But when it comes to yoga, no himsa of any kind, even to the extent of a very small himsa, is accepted. That's why we see the Jaina sannyasis. So in Jaina community, we see that they wear a mask around their mouth so that they want to avoid inhaling and killing microorganisms. And as they walk with a broom cleaning the path so that they don't tread upon small ants, insects on the path. So that's an example for Mahavratam. So it cannot be relaxed under any circumstance. That is particularly from the context of the jati. And then desha is space or place. So in holy waters, again continuing with the person catching fish, doing profession by catching, earning money by catching fish. So even that person, he might say that in holy places like the ponds of temple and the rivers that flow near the temple, there I will not catch fish. I will not harm fish in those places. But elsewhere, I will do. Again, this exception is also not acceptable. And then kala is time. Time is, yes. So there are certain auspicious times like Chaturdashi. So those times. So Vyasa mentions Chaturdashi. Chaturdashi and for example, Shashti is another, the sixth day from new moon or full moon. So Shashti, so it is special for Lord Subramanya. So on the day which is special for my, the deity which I worship, I will not kill the fish. So that is another exception coming through time. Again, this is not acceptable. And then samaya. Samaya is the circumstance. So, or for some special purpose. Samaya here refers to purpose. I have a guest at my house. So, I am not killing it for myself. It is for the purpose of the guest who is waiting at my house that I am catching and killing the fish. No. Again, for this purpose also ahimsa cannot be relaxed. So I'm just taking the example of ahimsa to show that jati cannot, for a practitioner, for a sadhaka, for an initiate, jati cannot bring forward any exception. Desha cannot bring forward any exception. Kala also cannot spring forth any exception, and purpose or samaya can also not spring forth any exceptions. So by all these, Patanjali rules out all possible exceptions that might come in the path of in the rules that govern the following of these yamas, and says that these are mahavratam. Under all circumstances, these five have to be followed. Only then they will aid progress in the path of yoga. Only then we can move to the next step in the path of yoga. Now, yama should be remembered along with mahavratam. Next one is niyama. We know that there are five niyamas: shaucha, santosha, tapas, swadhyaya, and ishvara pranidhana. So these five are the niyamas. Vyasa defines shaucham. Saushaucham simply means purity, cleanliness. Shaucham is mrit jala janitam, chittamala khalanam. Shaucha is classified by Vyasa in two ways. One is internal purity and the other is external purity. So external purity is caused by, that is, we clean our hands, our body using sometimes the sand and also water. So that is the external purity that we attain, and that is also shaucham. So purifying or cleansing or keeping clean the external self, that is also shaucham, and that is not alone shaucham, the internal aspect. Chitta mala kshalanam. So mala is impurity, chitta is mind, impurity of the mind, kshalanam is washing. So washing away the internal impurities is also implied by shaucham. So not entertaining any impure thoughts in the mind, which will not permit us to progress in yoga, that is also shaucham. Or he probably intends that as we develop this habit of external purity, naturally it will also have an impact on the mind and gradually help us cleanse the mind also. So it will create an ambience. So the external purity, internal purity will also kick off or start slowly. So these two types of purity should be taken care of. That is niyama, first aspect of niyama. The second is santosha. Santosha is translated as contentment. Contentment, being happy with what one gets and not desiring for more or not desiring for luxury, subsisting with the bare minimum, that which is easily accessible. So sannihita sadhanat adhikasya anupaditsa. Sannihita sadhana. Sannihita sadhana, those means of subsistence or those means of subsistence or survival which are sannihita, close by. Those means of subsistence which are close by, other than this, adhikasya, more than this, adhikasya anupaditsa. So the lack of desire to collect more material for survival than those which are readily available nearby. So this is santosha, being content with what is available locally and not traveling to various places to collect the mere things for survival. So this is santosha. So for example, in the vicinity of the ashrama, probably let's think of this in this way, only a few plants and trees are there which give certain fruits, and they may not give all kinds of cereals, nuts and spices. So being content with what is available around the house or the ashrama, so that is santosha, and not going and purchasing various collecting various other things which are very far away, which intends the intention of here, the thing is not spending much time in collecting more means for survival or more material for survival. So all that is available locally, the collection of those grains and other things will be very easy. Whereas we have to travel elsewhere to spend some time there to collect things. So that is santosha. So being happy with what is available locally or nearby. That is santosha, contentment. And tapaha. The third one is tapaha. Tapaha is dvandva sahanam. Dvandva sahanam is the ability to withstand. Sahanam refers to withstanding. Withstanding dvandva, the pairs of opposites. So what are the pairs of opposites listed by Vyasa? He says jighatsa pipase. Jighatsa is hunger, and pipasa is thirst. So withstanding this, shita ushne, shitoshne. So withstanding cold and heat, and then sthana asane, withstanding the difficulty in standing and also sitting. So during the practice of yoga, during meditation or during various practices, advanced practices in the path of spirituality, a sadhaka, an initiate, should nurture this virtue of withstanding the pairs of opposites, like hunger and thirst, cold and heat, and standing and sitting. So at any position he should be able to practice yoga. Under any climate he should be able to practice yoga. Under any physical condition he should be able to practice yoga. He should withstand all these factors that might bother him, that might deflect him from his practice. So that virtue, the nurturing of that virtue is called as tapas. And then comes the next one, is swadhyaya. Shaucha, santosha, tapas, swadhyaya. Swadhyaya refers to moksha shastranam adhyayanam pranava japaha. Swadhyaya refers to adhyayanam, study. Study of what? Moksha Shastranam. Study of those scriptures, Shastra, which discuss about moksha, liberation. So, mukti. So, a study of those literature that will grant or that discusses about moksha, that is Swadhyaya, according to Vyasa. And then Pranava Japaha, the repetition of Pranava. The japa of pranava or the omkara is also considered as swadhyaya by Vyasa. And then finally, Ishvara pranidhanam. Paramagurau sva karma samarpanam. This is Ishvara Pranidhanam. Parama Guru. He is the greatest Guru. Ishvara is the ultimate Guru. And Sva Karma Samarpanam. Offering all one's actions. Surrendering all one's action. Samarpanam. In or at the feet of the Ishvara. Who is called as the Parama Guru. The teacher of teachers. So he is the first teacher. So in a way, why, just reflecting, and why Ishvara is called as Guru. Guru is the one who teaches. And as we would have seen the definition of Ishvara in the first pada, which says, Klesha karma vipaka ashayaihi aparamrishtaha purusha visheshaha Ishvaraha. Ishvara is the one who is bereft of all kleshas, karma, all the vipaka, vasanas, all those things. So, he is the one who silently teaches us that we should also aspire to become like him. We should also aspire to free ourselves from the influence of klesha, karma, etc. by the practice of yoga. And hence, Ishvara is referred by Vyasa as Paramaguru, the highest among the teachers. Who can be a highest teacher? Who sets an example? Who not merely teaches, he makes himself an example to be followed. So he is the highest teacher, and hence Ishvara, who himself is free from all kleshas and vasanas, etc., is the highest teacher. So in him, in such Ishvara, surrendering all the karmas, that is Ishvara Pranidhanam. So these are the five niyamas. So we saw the five yamas, and then we saw the five niyamas. And then, in the context of yamas, we saw that there cannot be any exceptions in the practice of the yamas. It should be mahavratam. Under all circumstances, it should be practiced. And something similar to that is stated with regard to niyama. See, all that is applicable to yama is applicable to niyama also. See, the term mahavratam appears in between yama and niyama. So there is a Shastra Niyama which says Dehali Deepanyayaha. If something is kept on the threshold of the house, or if a light is kept on a threshold, it sheds its light on both sides, both inside and the outside. So similarly, Mahavratam, the term Mahavratam is placed in between Niyama and Yama. So which means Yama should also be Mahavratam and Niyama should also be Mahavratam. So by Dehali Deepanyaya we can say that these Niyamas should also be followed without any exceptions as Mahavratam. And then one more aspect it's a guideline regarding the practice of Yama and Niyama. It says, this is of course focused more on niyama, vitarka badhane pratipaksha bhavanam. This is a very interesting and important sutra, very practical sutra. It says vitarka badhanam. What happens is when one starts practicing these niyamas, one will be bothered, badhanam, he will be bothered by vitarkas. Vitarkas, the opposites, the viruddha tarkaha. For example, for ahimsa, the vitarka is himsa. And similarly, for that is from yama. And from niyama, when we see santosha, the desire to fetch more and more, than all that is available around one's house. So that is vitarka for santosha. So more desire is the vitarka for santosha. Himsa or hurting is the vitarka for ahimsa. So all these are called as the vitarkas. And when we see satya, what is the vitarka for satya? Asatyam. So telling a lie, that is the vitarka. So all these present themselves in various circumstances for a yogi. All these present themselves, so and they bother us. There might be a possibility of telling a lie. So it is a great bother for a yogi. How to avoid that? So vitarka badhane, due to as long as we don't, when we start getting into the practice of the yamas and niyamas, we will understand that how difficult it is to overcome. So far we were in the flow of all these things. We were along the current, taking all these along with us. But when we step aside and we decide to go against the current, then there will be lot of botheration, lot of difficulty in overcoming them. At each and every step, there will be a possibility of asatya. Each and every step, there will be a possibility of himsa. So when those things happen, vitarkas start their badha, or they, when they start giving trouble, so the difficulties that they may propose is anticipated by Patanjali, and then the method to overcome is presented as Pratipaksha Bhavanam in Sutra 33. Vitarka Badhane Pratipaksha Bhavanam. So what is Pratipaksha Bhavanam is Pratipaksha, the opposite, thinking about the nature of the opposite thing. Bhavanam is visualization. Visualization of the Pratipaksha. See, Himsa is the Vitarka to Ahimsa. So, what happens is that Pratipaksha is thinking about Himsa and its various forms. Himsa here is the Pratipaksha also. The Pratipaksha of Ahimsa is Himsa, and then visualizing the dangers of that Pratipaksha is Pratipaksha Bhavanam. Visualizing the dangers and the varieties and the cause, the nature of all of the Vitarkas or the Pratipaksha is called as Pratipaksha Bhavanam. That is, with great effort I have overcome all the negative aspects like Himsa, Asatya, etc. And now, if I go back to the old ways, then it is like taking back what has been donated to someone else. So all those descriptions are found there. So what essentially Pratipaksha Bhavanam refer here is, Pratipaksha and Vitarka are one and the same. Pratipakshasya Bhavanam. So visualizing the impact of the vitarkas or pratipakshas like Himsa, Asatyam, etc. So the next sutra details about the impact of the pratipakshas or the vitarkas. What are the vitarkas? Himsa, Asatya, Steya, Indriya Laulya, Parigraha, all these things are the opposing factors for the practice of Yama and Niyama. So then, how to overcome them is, it is to visualize the, going by the description of Sadashiva Brahmendra, Pratipaksha Bhavanam refers to the understanding of the Swarupa, the Prakara, the Karana, Avantarabheda, and the Phala. Five aspects. So, one has to consider about the five aspects. If a person is steadfast in Ahimsa, and now there arises a circumstance where he has to resort to Himsa, a sadhaka, a yoga practitioner. Now, when a situation presents where he has to resort to Himsa, then he has to do this Pratipaksha Bhavanam. As I mentioned earlier, Pratipaksha refers to, the word Pratipaksha indicates Himsa and other things, and Bhavanam is visualization. So, visualizing about Himsa and others. Visualizing what? Visualizing the Swarupa. Visualizing the nature of Himsa. And then visualizing the Prakara. Visualizing the various kinds of Himsas. And then visualizing the Karana. Visualizing the cause of Himsa. And then visualizing the Avantara Bheda. Visualizing the subdivisions of Himsa. And then finally, Phala. Visualizing the consequences of Himsa. So, when he visualizes or when he practices this Pratipaksha Bhavanam in these five manners, then he will really understand that how Himsa, by its Swarupa, by its Prakara, by the Karana, by Avantara Bheda, and by its Phala is very harmful. So, Pratipaksha Bhavanam, in a way, is a thorough analysis to any given life circumstance. So, when Himsa presents itself, when a yogi is tempted to perform Himsa, then he has to consider the Swarupa, Karana, Prakara, Avantara Bheda, and Phala of the Himsa. And when he considers, when a person does this bhavana, analyzes the situation in this manner, then he will naturally be dissuaded from performing that act, which is not very conducive to the progress in yoga. So, the sutra is that vitarkaha himsadayaha. So, as Vyasa or Sadashiva Brahmendra brings it out. So, the explanation, he says, so the swarupa of vitarka is himsa, asatyam, steyam, etc. So, what is the swarupa of the vitarkas? The opposing factors of yama and niyama. So, they have to be first understood. So, the opposing factor or the swarupa of the opposing factor is himsa. The swarupa of satyam is asatyam. So, that is the nature of the opposing factor. And then, that is swarupa. The second one is the prakara, the divisions. The divisions of the vitarka is krita, karita, anumodita. Divisions is, so himsa can be krita, can be committed by one's own self, that is also himsa. Karita, one can instigate others to perform some act of harm, that is also himsa. And anumodita, or being present in a situation where harm is committed and then expressing one's approval towards that himsa, that is also himsa. So, the swarupa of vitarka is himsa, asatyam, steyam, all these. And then the avantara bheda, the divisions of the vitarka, for example, himsa is committing himsa on one's own self, by one's own senses and body, committing and the mind committing harm, instigating others to commit harm, and then approving some harm which is committed. This is the prakara, the various kinds of himsas. A yogi should consider this, the second factor. And the third one is the karana. What is the karana of the vitarka? For example, himsa. So, lobha might be the karana. Lobha is lust or excessive desire. And then krodha, anger might be the karana. And then moha. Moha is delusion or confusion. So that might be the karana. So the yogi, in the course of his pratipaksha bhavanam, should consider that these pratipakshas, the violence, the untruthfulness, all these might have their cause in lobha, krodha or moha. So one should consider this. The yogi in the process of pratipaksha bhavanam should think about the cause of this, and then he should also think about the phala or the consequences. So if I commit this harm, if I commit this himsa, what happens is it will lead to dukkha ajnana ananta phalaha. So this will lead to dukkha. The ananta should be connected with both. Ananta dukkha and ananta ajnana. So, doing anything that goes against yama and niyama will result in ananta dukkha. For example, Vyasa presents this in his commentary. If I harm a person due to some circumstances, then what happens is, at a later stage, I start thinking that I should not have caused that harm, and that keeps ringing in the mind for days together. So that is ananta, continuously, without end, the sense of guilt continues. So sense of guilt is a kind of dukkha, which is ananta. So endlessly, it causes pain and ajnana, and also performance of these kinds of acts sometimes pushes us into ignorance, a person tends to stay with those wrong notions for long. So what happens is, in this process of pratipaksha bhavanam, a yogi should consider these five factors. So, when himsa presents itself, he should analyze its swarupa. He should analyze its prakara. So when himsa presents itself, he should analyze its swarupa or its nature. He should analyze its prakara or the divisions. He should analyze its karana or the cause. He should analyze it. Avantara bheda, the subdivisions, and then he should analyze its consequences, that is the phala. And this is pratipaksha bhavanam. And when he does this, then what happens is that he will be naturally dissuaded from performing or committing that thing which goes against yama and niyama. So this is pratipaksha bhavanam. I have a question here. Does Patanjali include pashu himsa in yagas as himsa, or does he exclude it? As we see in Patanjali Yoga Sutras, Yoga Sutra text themselves, we do not find any reference to Pashuhimsa. Further, Patanjali makes it very clear that it is Mahavratam. So under any circumstance, no one can claim any exception to the practice of this. So by implication, it means if a person is totally dedicated or is a sadhaka in the path of yoga, all kind of himsa under all circumstances. See, this comes under samaya. During the performance of yaga, I will commit himsa. For Patanjali, even this is unacceptable. So, and it should be very clearly understood that when we speak of ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya and aparigraha, we should understand it in two planes. One is a person who is a sadhaka, who is a yogi, and a normal person who is just looking at it, who is just studying things, trying to understand things. So we should not mix these two together. Ahimsa for a yogi is absolute, whereas ahimsa for a person in day-to-day life is not absolute. It is according to the context in which he lives. So that ahimsa of yogi should not be mixed with this ahimsa. So one cannot practice absolute ahimsa in normal course of life and part-time ahimsa is not accepted in the path of yoga. So this differentiation needs to be looked into while understanding the concept of ahimsa, satya, asteya, and they cannot be interpreted as they are for normal day-to-day living. So we will again revise this concept of pratipaksha bhavanam in the next class, which is very important, and we can end the session here. Yes, so we'll conclude the session here. Paul Mohodaya, you have asked about the chapter and shloka of Bhagavad Gita. I will, just get back and send it or give it in the next class. So, I just quoted it from my memory. So, I'll consult the text and give you exactly on the asteya concept in the next class, the reference. So we'll meet again the next Friday. So, we'll conclude with the prarthana. योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचाम् मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तम् प्रवरम् मुनीनाम् पतञ्जलिम् प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि।